Good morning, members. Just to say it's actually past 11 o'clock. The first item of business is, in the absence of Councillor Milligan, could I have nominations for the chair, please? Seconder? Okay. Thank you.
Right, thanks, colleagues, and welcome to today's meeting of the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee. Could I have apologies for absence, please?
We have apologies from Councillors Milligan, Bennett, Russell and Young.
Okay, under the order of business, there is an item that I would like to add to the agenda, if members are happy with that, and it is to discuss an issue that was raised regarding the remit of the new buyers subcommittee. If I could take that, given that the new buyers subcommittee meets in private, I'm suggesting we take that at the end of the agenda in private. Is everybody okay with that? Okay, thanks for that. Any declarations of interest? No. Minutes of the previous meeting. The minute of the meeting of the 6th of September 2016 submitted for approval. Agreed? Okay. Minutes of the Special Performance Committee and Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee on the 7th of September submitted for approval. Is that agreed?
Yeah. Rick? Sorry.
Councillor?
I handed in my apologies that morning, but the leader of the administration said that I had to be present, so I joined the group, but I came in after already the apologies had been handed in, but I was present when Councillor Wallace spoke about the MOD under the issue of adult care. So I would like to have it changed that I would present on the meeting of the 7th at 11 a.m.
Thanks, Councillor Devinck. Do you have any information as far as the clerk's concerned in terms of information that was recorded for that meeting?
Yeah, although I wasn't actually present at that meeting, my understanding is that your apologies were recorded. According to the clerk who actually was at the meeting, she is quite adamant that you weren't in attendance. There's no record of you asking questions. There's no record of you on the actual recording. So that's about as much as I can add at this stage.
I was present. I was sitting over there currently where Councillor BT is standing next door to Joe, Councillor Wallace, and I heard exactly what he had to say about the MOD and when he used the phrase those people. So also present was Councillor Baxter. I didn't speak at that meeting, so there's no record, but there we are.
It's a difficult situation. If there is no record whatsoever, the clerk is adamant. I can't recall you being at the meeting either, Councillor Devinck. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how we take this forward. If anybody's got any advice in terms of the officers.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, Convener, when it comes to meetings like this, it's always a different mixture of councillors. So it's never possible to say he was there. It's unlike a full council meeting, when you would notice a councillor was not present just because of the sheer numbers of the voting system. But when it comes to a meeting like this, then you already have four of your councillors missing that were present before. I couldn't say that. It was only when Mr Laurie said he was present at the meeting that I can't mind these things. So, I mean, I don't know how this gets resolved, but for anybody to solemnly swear that Councillor Devinck wasn't there, or was there, I'm sorry, it just can't happen. So, I mean, I don't think anybody can prove otherwise.
I mean, there seems to be a difference of opinion amongst the members. As far as the officers are concerned, that minuted the meeting, they're adamant that Councillor Devinck wasn't there, and the minutes of the meeting have recorded what they believe to be the case. I'm not quite sure what we do here, other than note the difference of opinion.
What I can confirm is that, again, I couldn't swear for definitely be that particular meeting, that the leader, Kath Johnson, did say to Peter Devinck that he had to turn up to a certain meeting because I would have been there on my own otherwise. And that's all I can say to that. So, I mean, it would just be a matter of difference of opinion, is somebody saying he was there or he wasn't there.
Well, Chief Executive.
Well, I wonder if the solution here is simply, as part of today's minute, to note Councillor Devinck's contention that he was in attendance at that previous meeting, to simply have that in today's minute, noting Councillor Devinck's point.
Has everybody agreed with that? Yeah. In the absence of any other information, in the absence of the cameras being switched on, I'm not sure what else we can do. Okay. Okay then, thank you. We'll move on from that. Item 4.3, minute of the meeting, the Special Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee on the 7th of September in the afternoon. For approval? Agreed? Okay then, on to item 5, public reports 5.1, the inspection of Morriswood Primary School and Nursery Classes. Report by Director. Yep, thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Chair. This report it outlines the outcome of the inspection that took place in Morriswood Primary School in May of this year. Section 2.2, you'll see that in the primary school, they noted the improvements in performance as good, the learners' experience good, meeting learners' needs very good. And in the nursery class, improvements in performance as very good, children's experiences very good, and meeting learners' needs good. And in terms of the curriculum for both, the was examined as being good, and improvements through self-evaluation as satisfactory. So Section 2.3 outlines the particular strengths, and Section 2.4 outlines areas that were agreed between the HMIE, the nursery and the Education Service. I'll draw members' attention to the appendix, and it's page 23. And under the second paragraph, how well do children learn and achieve? Across the primary stages, children settling quickly to tasks, behaviour in classrooms and throughout the school is exemplary. The children benefit from good relationships with each other and work well on tasks. The children feel valued and respond well to the encouragement and support from teachers. I think the fact that they said that behaviour was exemplary was really good for the school, but also what the inspectors found was they couldn't work out who were children, army children, who had just arrived in the school, that they were so settled within the school, you couldn't point out the children who were unsettled. So I think that's a fantastic outcome for the school. So the rest of the report is as set out, and the recommendations are to note the content of the inspection report and to congratulate parents, pupils, carers and staff connected with the primary school and on the key strengths and areas for improvement. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Councillor Beattie.
Thank you, Chair. I'm really delighted to see the report, and I do accept Dr Smith's comments fully that we should be congratulating everyone involved. What does concern me a little is the improvement through self-evaluation comment is only satisfactory. And that's a little concerning when, obviously, self-evaluation plays a very big part in how a school performs, since it can be a long time between inspections. And I wonder what exactly are the proposals to stimulate self-evaluation and improve it? Could we hear a little more about that, please?
The head teacher pulled together all of the information in terms of the self-evaluation, and given, as you say, it's between inspections, it's there is a time lag, but also schools do a self-evaluation every year. The reason it was satisfactory was the head teacher, who's excellent, pulled together all of the information, and instead of kind of saying, in this area, this is what we've done, and this has led to this part of the improvement, she kind of gave them everything, but without doing the link to how it's improved outcomes. So a bit of work to be done there, and the head teacher accepts that she didn't make that direct link, and that's why they were saying it was satisfactory. All of the information was there, but the link wasn't made. But by doing A, the outcome was C. She had A and B and C together, and the outcome was D. So Judith appreciates herself that there's a bit of work to be done there, and not just by herself, you know, by the school. So she accepts that it was satisfactory, but the plan is in place about how we move forward with that.
If I could just come back, my commiserations to the head teacher. I know what a dedicated individual she is. I'm also well aware that in any school, there's a tremendous amount of tension around these inspections, and I'm not surprised, and perhaps a little bit more reassurance for her confidence when she's putting the presentation of the information together. So my sincere commiserations to her for that. Satisfactory, but it's reassuring. Thank you.
Councillor Coventry.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, just to, you know, for by the satisfactory for improvement through self-evaluation, I think this is an excellent report by Education Scotland, and I just want to congratulate the school, the staff, the parents and everyone involved. I think it's a great reflection on the work that they're doing.
Thanks, Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick question. Just wondering what the Sky Skills Academy is. I probably want a reassurance it's nothing to do with Rupert Murdoch.
Sadly. No, no. There is the Skills Academy that the youngsters from Midlothian and all over Scotland can go to, and they'll do video presentations, television presentations, and it's really to raise awareness. So, unfortunately, it is something to do with Mr. Murdoch. But absolutely fantastic for our young people, just to get the taste of, you know, what happens in a television studio, what happens, you know, recording, presentations, all of that sort of stuff.
Councillor Coventry.
And just to add to that, it involves the children going out to Livingston, and as the director has indicated, that they get a first-hand experience of what life would be like in journalism, all the different occupations and professions related to broadcasting, which are many.
OK, anybody else on this one? OK, yep.
Sorry, a slightly pedantic point, but I do want to make it in relation to the second recommendation. I think it's absolutely right that we congratulate the pupils, parents, carers and staff on the key strengths, but I think we should note the areas for improvement. So I think that either the splitting of that recommendation or just the additional word would make it read rather better.
Is everybody content with that? I think that's a fair point. We do need to highlight where there are issues that just need to be dealt with, even though we've had a satisfactory explanation of them here today. So agreeing to note of the report and with the amendment regarding that one issue, to congratulate the pupils, parents and carers and staff. Agreed? Yep. Thank you. OK, moving on, item 5.2, the accreditation of Mayfield Nursery School's ICAN provision.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to outline the outcome of the ICAN accreditation, and obviously the ICAN provision is for the whole of Midlothian, even though it's based at Mayfield. So really delighted, because there's 10 sections that need to be completed as part of this. So I'm pleased that ICAN completed all of the sections. In total, there were 52 strengths across the 10 sections and 20 areas for improvement. But in conclusion, what they found was the comprehensive portfolio of evidence that was actually supporting the accreditation. And that's all credit, really, to Lisa, because prior to the summer, she also had her Education Scotland and Care Inspectorate inspection, and again her record keeping was found to be exemplary during that. We have the recommendations there to note the content of the report, which we're delighted with, obviously to congratulate the pupils, parents and staff, and obviously to note the further areas for development, which were 20 as cited in 2.4.
Councillor Beattie.
Thank you. I think it's important to note that in the body of the report there's comments about the head teacher, about Lisa Barnes' leadership skills and her interpersonal skills, and I think they bear serious observation and consideration because they are extraordinary. She is outstanding and she has inspired an awful lot of teachers and learners and parents in this community, I'm meaning the education community as well as the wider community that she works with. It's also worth remembering that during the first early years initiative with the great gathering of the great and the good in Glasgow, it was she who led a presentation for a national exemplar on early learning. So I do think we could bear as a committee to send our particular compliments and congratulations to her as well as the whole team. Thank you.
Absolutely agree with that. Anybody else want to come in on this one? No? So agree to the recommendations? Agreed? Yep. Okay, moving on to item 5.3, report from Scottish Ministers on compliance with the climate change duties for 15-16.
Thank you, Chair. At its meeting of the 22nd of November 2016, Cabinet considered a report regarding the Council's statement of compliance with its climate change duties 2015-16. Cabinet determined to refer the Council's statement of compliance onto the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee for information. Since 2007, all Scottish local authorities have been signatories to Scotland's climate change declaration, publicly committing themselves to reducing greenhouse gas emissions, taking steps to adapt to climate change and working in partnership on climate change. Following a 2014-15 pilot, reports for 2015-16 are required by statute to be submitted to Scottish ministers. This requirement has replaced the voluntary regime which was in place from 2008. A copy of the statement submitted to the Scottish Government is attached to the report. Public bodies report by completing an online form, the format and content of which are prescribed by regulations and set by the Scottish Government. The statement sets out the Council's position with regard to its governance, management and strategy with regard to climate change, its level of carbon emissions and its commitment to the National Adaptation Programme. In general terms, the Council's own level of carbon dioxide emissions is reducing as a result of its efforts to make its buildings more energy efficient, by rationalising its estate and by improving management of its waste. Although the overall picture is one of reducing emissions, the level of emissions from staff business travel and staff commuting to work is increasing. The report is... It is recommended that Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee note the report.
Thanks, Peter. Comments, questions? Ian?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure I can support the submission of this report. There are a number of inaccuracies in it, which I'm surprised were not picked up by Cabinet. I'll go through them one by one, if that's okay, if you can answer each one. On page 53 of the agenda, and my apologies because it's very difficult to read this, it's difficult for me to make notes on it. About halfway down the second section within that, it says there is a commitment to applying the climate change assessment tool in future. Was my understanding from last year's report is this was to be completed for 2015-16, and I'm not aware of having seen it at all. Can you provide an update on that?
Sorry, Chair. Just to clarify, I haven't printed off the whole agenda, so I've just kept the papers on the climate change. I presume we're talking about part two, governance, management and strategy. Are we in terms of the actual submission?
Yes, that's right. Yes, it's page 53 on the agenda. I think it's difficult to read because it's dark grey background. I think it was like 2B.
Chair. I know it's quite a dry subject insofar as that the template and the format is set by Scottish Government in terms of how it reads and how it looks. In terms of some of the commitments we've identified where we are with regard to different strategies, and I would acknowledge that there's still work to be done with regard to sort of adaptations to the sort of national programme using the tools identified. So that work still needs to be done.
Well, moving on then, on to page 55 of the agenda at the top, and again it's difficult to read which section it is. It looks like 2D. It says this document referring to the corporate change climate change strategy approved in March 2014. This document is not currently available online. Why isn't it, and when will it be?
Yes, Chair. We can make that document available online relatively quickly. To be honest, I think it's just a case that relatively recently the Council updated its website and we've just not got round to putting that back on. The other thing I would just say on that, though, is that we're due to update the climate change strategy, so that's a piece of work which would take place in the new year. So there'll be an updated version of that as well, but I can go away and make sure that's up on the Council's website.
On page 57, there are, I think these are priority, I'll just try and find it on the document because I just can't read in that grey section. I think it says that there are five priorities, I think these are, if I can find it now. No, I can't find it here. Oh, there it is, yeah. What are the body's top five priorities for climate change governance management strategy for the year ahead? The first one is to draft a corporate climate change and sustainable development action plan by the 31st of March 2017. Last year's report said that it would not just be drafted but would be approved by 2015-16. I think you yourself, Peter, sent me an email saying that it would be reported to Cabinet on the 31st of May 2016. So this seems to be continually work in progress.
Yes, correct, Chair. The timetable has slipped, and you're right, it's work in progress. Yeah.
Further progress of climate management, climate risk in accordance with the adaptation of Scotland's five steps. The 2014-15 report said there was an additional commitment to, quote, commence work on an EU covenant of MERS-style sustainable energy action plan or equivalent. Can you give me an update on that?
Not at this point, Chair. I'd have to come back to you on that point. I don't have the answer to that question.
The fourth one says review the governance structure and management system in relation to climate change. This is a similar commitment made last year. Again, it seems to be another work in progress.
Chair, it is work in progress. You're right. In terms of the actual overall governance and structure, I think there's probably an area which we could look at to change and improve. I guess the slip has partly been down to there's been a sort of planning review which has taken place at the planning service, so changes in roles and responsibilities have impacted on the timetable of that, but I'm aware that that's a commitment which we need to deliver on.
And similar on the following page, it's again the same commitment that was made last year. I just wonder what the point is of us supplying information to the Scottish Government which says, yeah, we're working on it, come back later. Page 62 of the agenda, where it gives some figures. These figures just don't seem to... I think there's a date that's wrong here, but on the second block there, the second table, long-term carbon management plan emissions reduction target, you've got 31.2% progress against target. I understand that's actually against the 2012-13 figure is actually a 12.4% progress rather than the 31.2%. Can you clarify that?
Yeah, Chair. It might be useful to refer you to paragraph 3.6 of the accompanying report. It's rounded off in the report to 31%, but that's a a measure against the Council's own carbon management plan for 2013-16, which was reported to Cabinet in October, I believe, and that is the Council's measure of carbon dioxide from its buildings, street lighting, school buildings, its fleet, and that's then picking up that figure from there.
Yeah, I think I'm going back to the. I think it was the report. It might be in the report in October that went to Cabinet, but I seem to recall that that 31.2 figure was against a 2006-07 baseline rather than a 2012-13 baseline. Is that correct?
Sorry, Chair, can you just run those dates past me again?
Yeah, the 31.2 progress against baseline was, I think it was a baseline of 2006-07 rather than 2012-13 as is contained in this report.
Okay. So I'll have to double check the dates and come back to that. I think you're right, but I'll have to double check.
Against baseline. Right, well, let's see. Yeah, similar figures in the next two parts there that I feel are maybe not quite right. On page 67 of the agenda, part 4 adaption, it says the bottom section, the Council has previously drafted a local climate impact profile. I'm afraid this is new on me. When was this produced and do we have any plans for an update?
Sorry, Chair, I don't have the answer to that just yet. I'm sorry, I'm just picking up the right page from...
Page 67, I think. Again, I can't read the...
It's the third box down.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chair, I'll have to go away and come back to you on that point.
Yeah, the bit that I found... a bit odd, more than most, was page 69. It says, again, below the dark bit in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th column, 1, 2, 3, 4th row down, climate change impacts have been taken into account in reaching planning decisions. Now, Cold Hall was the immediate thing that jumped into my mind here, but can you give examples of the kind of planning decisions where climate change impacts have been taken into account?
I think the starting point with that one, Chair, is that the proposed local plan and the current adopted local plan take on board climate change issues in terms of its spatial strategy. So it's initially identifying the most appropriate places to locate land uses and development, and that's a good example of that. For example, in the 2008 adopted local plan is development along the Borders Rail corridor, so you're looking at having development along the sustainable transport corridor. You're also looking at, you may recall from the 2008 adopted local plan, you've got a policy which references energy levels from buildings, and as a requirement of that policy, all new buildings had to have a certain level of technology or insulation which reduced the level of carbon emissions from a building. And as a consequence, there was a step change, not just in the construction and development of buildings, but the Scottish Government then updated its building regulations legislation so that replaced the sort of planning requirements. There's a direct relationship between sort of emissions from a building. In terms of other considerations, every time we consider a development, we make sure it's a sustainable development. That's what the planning system's in part about. But it starts with the local plan and development plan. So that's what the vehicle is in terms of assessing climate change.
Well, I'm again also thinking about the A701, the extension of Straighton, the road network being clogged up, and our local plan and CESS plan even don't have any proposals to extend light or heavy rail other than the Borders Railway. So I'm wondering what we're doing that is over and above what are statutory requirements within our local plan, which have been specified perhaps by the Scottish Government in terms of energy efficiency of new buildings. What are we doing over and above what's required of us?
Chair, I think it's difficult to separate out from above and beyond what's required of us, insofar as that the planning system across Scotland is moving forward as a whole in terms of promoting sustainable development in the right locations. In terms of individual projects, housing schemes, we are looking to promote public transport by securing maybe developer contributions towards local bus services or bus infrastructure. For example, there's a bus that goes through the Streatham Retail Park, which has been part subsidised from developer contributions, which has been secured on the back of a planning application. So there are individual situations like that. But in terms of general, just the whole planning system as a whole is moving forward in terms of its relationship with climate change.
On page 75, it's more a sort of a suggestion than anything. The second block down, it says considerations being given to approaching another local authority for peer validation process. I'm just wondering, is it the reasons of costs that we would do that rather than go to an organisation that perhaps specialises in this kind of review? I think ChangeWorks, I think in Edinburgh, would be the kind of organisation I would be thinking about.
To be honest, I don't know what the cost would be exactly, but I think it's maybe something we can look at in the future. I know you say it was a suggestion which we'd happily take on board and consider that in the future, and we can make a judgment about the cost on that point. So definitely worth considering for next time round.
Thanks. On page 77, table 1B, I'm a bit confused as to what the difference is between this and table 1A, which is in the page before it, because the figures seem quite similar and they seem to relate to the same things, but I just don't know what the difference is.
Yeah, sure. I'd have to go and double check. This is just because the, I know it's slightly confusing with the tables, but obviously you appreciate that it's an online form that we fill out. So we're extracting data and information from a variety of sources and populate it into the tables. I know the tables in 1A are showing the reduction of emissions which are taking place. I'd have to just cross-reference them with the figures in Table 1B, but I'll come back to you once I've got the answer for that.
They're not material differences. I'm just perplexed as to why they should be slightly different. Finally, you'll be glad to know, on page 79, the top row there, it refers to other parts of the document here, to a target of 4.5 tonnes per capita emissions in Midlothian. Now, that was dropped from the Single Midlothian Plan last year. I'm just wondering why we dropped it, and if it's included here in the return to the Scottish Government, why we've dropped it from our own, essentially, our agenda that the Council works towards.
I suppose the methodology of the Single Midlothian Plan is one pulled together in liaison with its communities and other groups. It's not just the council setting its own individual priorities, but the 4.5 commitment is because it's within the climate change agenda. It's a case that we don't necessarily need to duplicate it, I would have thought, in the Single Midlothian Plan. It's still the target, it's still the figure we're measuring against, and going forward that's the aspiration.
Thank you. Just a second, Councillor Beattie.
Thank you, Chair. It's a general comment, really, and it's a considerable concern to me that we're proposing to put this committee's approval behind a document that we can't read substantial chunks of. I find that quite disturbing, and I'm not sure what the ramifications are if we ask for this to be returned to us in a legible form for another meeting, because I appreciate there are requirements for us to submit as a council in due course, and there are dates in place, I believe, and I'd be grateful for guidance on this, Chair.
I must admit that I read this document initially on my iPad, so it's easier to see in that circumstance. But I was quite surprised when I actually picked the agenda up this morning and had a look at it and how difficult it actually was to read. There is an issue in terms of us approving, Councillor Beattie. What he's saying is this report refers this report to the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee for its information. I'm not quite sure. I would take it, given that the submission of this report to ministers was due by the 30th, has that already been done? It was agreed by Cabinet to be submitted by the 30th. Is that something that's been done already?
Yes, Chair, it's been submitted. But, Chair, the other thing, just to come back on your earlier point as well, is that it is difficult. The templates are an online system, so we're just printing off what we can from the online system. Potentially, I could print it off as an A3, I guess, which would scale it up, but that's the other option. But in terms of the submission, it's an annual report which we have to submit, so we've got approval from Cabinet, so it was then submitted.
Councillor Beattie, come back in again.
Please, it's on the same. The concern is that while it doesn't seek our approval, we're supposedly now informed. I'm not informed, and I'm concerned.
There does certainly seem to be a number of issues for which we require additional information, and I think it's important that we get the opportunity to come back on that. Even though it's been submitted at this point, I think there was sufficient amount of questions asked that, and a lot of them understandably, you know, able to give the information here today, but normally that's one or two things. There's quite a lot in here today, I think, that would warrant it maybe coming back to us to get these questions answered, and rather than just by email to individuals, to just back before the committee. Does that seem sensible? Is this on this issue, Councillor Baxter? Yep, go.
Sorry, I'm just asking for clarification, because it says we're asked to endorse the recommendation, so what's the implication of us not endorsing it?
That wording, I believe, is the Cabinet's wording. I think this is a Cabinet paper.
No, it says the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee is asked to endorse the recommendations approved by Cabinet on 22nd November as detailed below. Those below, I accept that they were the recommendations which were being agreed on by Cabinet, but to asking us to endorse that.
I've got a feeling that's not correct, but maybe the Chief Executive can clarify that.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I mean, the Cabinet approved the submission and referred it to this committee for information. So I do think there's a contradiction in a way between what it says at the top of the recommendations and what the Cabinet was actually asking this committee to do. But I think what takes precedence is the fact the Cabinet was asking it to be sent to you for information, and that the report, that the recommendation in this report should have been written in a way that accurately reflected that, but it wasn't. And I mean, just on the point you were making, Chair, I mean, the submission has been made. There was no attempt by this committee to call it in, which would have been an option to review the decision. But there's certainly the possibility of once, you know, the various issues raised have been looked at and answer has come up with it, it comes back, for example, to the next committee, and members can be provided with A3 copies, if that would help, as well as the electronic ones.
I think that's a sensible way forward. Councillor.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I've no strong issues with this going to the Scottish Government. It's just I feel it's too bland, and I feel that there are possible inaccuracies in there. You know, I've asked a few questions. I don't think they're huge, but I just feel that it's just bland. It's just ticking the boxes, saying, yeah, we're doing this, come back next year, and we might have progressed it a bit. But there's no real, you know, I think there was one point, I think we were told that it sort of carbon reduction should be part of our DNA within the council. I don't see any evidence of that. I really don't see any. I'm aware of the pressures, the financial pressures, the staffing pressures. There are so many different things that your teams are all working on, and I get that. But I just feel that, you know, when we do something like this, we should at least be upfront and honest and say, look, we haven't done this, we haven't got the resources to do it, rather than saying it'll be done next year, and then next year saying it'll be done the next year. That's how I feel about it.
Okay, Councillor Devanc.
I was going to raise the same issue as Councillor Beattie. It really is not correct that we get these documents and we can't read what is there. I did not, because I cannot download it on my iPad, look at it through the iPad. So I'm afraid I had the disadvantage of not being able to read, and that isn't correct. We ought to have a better system in printing it all out for us.
Yeah, I'm sure that's been taken on board. Brian?
Sorry to repeat this, but I've already said this to Democratic Services. If it's worth printing, it's worth printing legible. You know, I'd rather, you know, they'll be up front, you say, you know, you read it on your device, which we can do, you know, in here, you know, and Ian's got his on front of him, you know, so he's obviously been better prepared on that. But even the thing saying page number, what font is that page that in, you know? That's something we could easily clarify, you know, so we've got a nice, a decent font for the page numbers of the report. And I'm not an IT expert, but, you know, it's these text boxes, surely they could be widened. There's so much big margins in a lot of this report, you know, that we could actually utilise, I'm sure, you know, without any major change, just to make it a bigger font, you know, and the shading is inappropriate, you know, when we're photocopying these papers in black and white. And, you know, we could maybe make adjustments to take away the shading, especially if it's the back of text. There's a lot of just simple things we can do, but let's make sure that the reports that are presented that are in clarity to the committee and work on it. If you're going to print it, make sure it's readable.
Yeah. I think that can be more difficult. The information before us is so that we understand it and can make some kind of judgment on it. Therefore, it has to be legible. So I think that will have been taken on board. So what we're saying on this one then, we note the report, but we would wish to have it back to the next meeting of the PRS for answers to the questions that have been asked here today. Is that agreed? Yep. Okay, thank you. The next meeting, yep. I mean, if there's information available, I mean, it can be circulated, if there's information available in advance of that, but I would guess that there's quite a wee bit of digging to be done, so it may well be the next meeting. Item 5.4, Adult Social Care and Health Budget Pressures, a report by Joint Director, Alison, even.
Thank you, Chair. So the purpose of this report is just to provide members with the background to the current financial pressures that we're facing in adult social care and health, and a summary of some of the key actions that have been taken to address these. I'm not going to go through every item, but I am wanting to highlight some of the key areas that I particularly think are relevant. So section 2.3, we're referencing some of the work that happened as Audit Scotland has been reviewing social work and social care across Scotland, and are highlighting some of the real pressures that we'd be facing in terms of some of the challenges that we have across that area, particularly in terms of the report certainly goes on to estimate that if social care continues to be provided using the same model and approaches, there'll be a 16 to 21% increase in spend by councils would be necessary by 2020, which in Mid Lothian would amount to an additional £8 million. Obviously, that is a report, and that's if we do nothing differently. So obviously, part of this report is about addressing some of the challenges and some of the things that we do need to look at doing differently. The projected overspend for 16-17 at this point of time from quarter two was 1.4, just over £1.4 million out of a total budget of £38 million. And the most significant area overspend in relation to that was in relation to the resource panel budget. Now, resource panel budget is the money that we spend on those packages of care and support for individuals, so be that care at home, day service support, residential care, and it's the externally purchased, so it doesn't include the costs of our in-house services. But the money that's spent on resource panel, you can trace back to individual people in terms of what's there within that. Council policy is committed to meeting eligibility criteria, and that's those people who, following an assessment, are evidenced to have either critical or substantial care needs. And the commitment is that if we've assessed that somebody meets those standards, that we will meet those needs. There isn't a chance for us to put someone on a waiting list until new monies become available. It's that commitment that we've made that if we've assessed someone as requiring something, that we will then deliver that. But that doesn't mean to say that we can't think about shifting the way that we're delivering some of that work. There are also challenges at 2.6. We highlight some of the challenges in the context of NHS Lothian, and certainly in line with the Integrated Joint Board as we're looking at how we develop services. The pressures that are being faced in health have impacts for us, and it's about how we work collectively in the IJB to address those dual pressures that we're getting from both areas. Section 2.7 and 2.8 are highlighting some of those underlying causes, both in terms of some of the overspends. The reasons for the overspends, particularly in older people's services, are attributed to the failure of one of our external providers and the extra support that we've needed to put in around that. And certainly we've seen an increase in expenditure of 26% in the past couple of years across learning disabilities and complex physical disabilities. And that's often down to some of the additional costs and factors that we've got. There's also changes that we've had legislatively around the minimum wage for sleepovers and the requirement for us to pay the living wage requirement, so there have been some increases with that. Unpredictable demand at 2.9, certainly around the fact that it is difficult to know what the assessed need of someone else will be for that, so as we're planning for services, there are variations in needs and as people's conditions change, particularly when we look at some of the younger people with disabilities with very complex needs that are coming through, and some of the costs for us to undertake that so that we can manage. Often it can be easy to highlight the ones where social work are really actively involved from children's services, but if someone's been managed reasonably well with a couple of nights respite and a good support package from someone like Saltersgate, actually it's at the point they come to adult services and the school element of their support is taken out of that mix that it becomes a bit more of a surprise because they've actually not been known to children and families social work. So we're improving some of the work around transitions within that. Section 2.11 to Point 13 is highlighting some of those areas that we're looking at in terms of recovery, so be that improved financial information, how we're allocating resources and about some of making the decision-making process more risk-based and strengthening some of that amongst our frontline staff, the reviewing of our existing packages of care and how we're just redesigning some of the way we deliver services. Are there better ways of us still meeting outcomes for individuals within that but in a more cost-effective manner? One of the big challenges that we have, and I think one of the areas that it would be really good to get councillor support in, is managing public expectations. I think there have been increased public expectations about what social work will be able to deliver, and I think it's about us having conversations about what realistic care looks like and how we can support people within their own communities. Certainly, the Scotland's Chief Medical Officer had recently published a report on realistic medicine in terms of what we should and we shouldn't be offering for individuals, and I think we need to look at that across all of health and social care. There are obviously real challenges for us in terms of resources. If we're unable to address this, it is a real risk within that, and also the challenge to further reduce the budget in next year's savings. We've already identified that we would meet a challenge of that, but the overspend this year makes that a risk as we move forward if we're not seeing that some of those key factors and recovery plans are being addressed. So in terms of recommendations, we'd want you to note the work that is underway to address the projected overspend and to consider the implications of the current financial position when making decisions about the financial offer to the Integrated Joint Board. Happy to pause for questions.
Okay. Councillor Coventry, then Councillor.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. It's just a small point. The last paragraph in section 2.8 mentions the living wage, 825. Is it not 8.45 from October in Scotland?
No, the commitment was for £8.25 from the 1st of October 2016, and that was what we'd committed to with the Scottish Government. That doesn't mean to say that the living wage doesn't increase, but the commitment that we'd reached with the Scottish Government was to pay £8.25 from the 1st of October, and that was what we'd received funding for. The negotiations with Scottish Government about whether we increase the living wage is still to be had, and there's been no clear guidance on that. The living wage, interestingly, we had to make the agreement for the living wage of £8.25 from the 1st of October, knowing that the Living Wage Foundation normally announces what the new living wage was in November, but the commitment was to meet £8.25 from the 1st of October.
Yes, sir,
Devink. Point 22, 8 million by 2020, is that part of the £40 million that Midlothian is facing as a budget deficit, or is that on top of the £40 million that we have been given as the expected deficit by 2020?
That is not included within the £40 million figure. However, what I would say is we're not asking for £8 million as a directorate within this. What we're suggesting is that if we take the information that's coming out from Audit Scotland, that is what it would represent for Midlothian. I would say that that isn't taken into account with the budget figures that have been presented to you about the shortfall, and that's not a request. I think it was just highlighting some of the information from the National Audit Body.
So effectively, we should review the £40 million and make it £48 million.
I don't think that's what's being said. I think what's being said is that that is the information that's a kind of worst case scenario that could occur should the estimates provided prove to be the case. I'm not sure that that's as Alison's saying is looking for an extra £8 million. Chief Executive.
Yeah, I mean the Audit Scotland report makes a very interesting reading, but it's talking about what the increase will costs will be if we do not change the model of care. And as a council, as you've seen in various council reports, and certainly those of you in the IJB, you know, we are absolutely committed to changing the model of care. So what I think it is, more than anything else, is just a salutary reminder of the scale of the challenge and the fact that we need to keep on that transformational journey that we're on in health and social care. And certainly we've been very cautious in terms of, you know, the budget figures shared with members about any assumptions in relation to savings from health and social care in future years, and that is indicative of the scale of the challenge.
Is it not the case, though, that, you know, I can understand Councillor Devink's point to an extent here, that there should be some allowance within our budget figures, because it's not going to be nothing. There's going to be something up to the £8 million.
Well, what we do have at the moment is a commitment to increase the adult social care budget year on year by a figure which we call the demographic figure, which at the moment I think is in the region of £1.2 million a year. So if we continue with that, then that would mean that our spend increases by £6 million, and that is included in the gap. That commitment to the demographic uplift year on year is included in the gap. I think the challenge for us is that actually we need to find ways to deliver service, change the way we provide things, integrate with health in a way whereby we can remove that need for the additional monies and therefore, you know, create additional efficiencies in the system.
Councillor Beattie.
Thank you, Chair. Two comments. One is on 2.14 on the managing public expectations. I don't think that's an unfair comment in any way, but having said that, I would think that to some degree the department is a victim of its own success. It set the bar so high in a lot of early work that was done in modelling. I think many of us in this room actually went out when we had the demo house out in Rosewell, if I remember correctly. Was it Rosalind? Thank you. And those kind of early steps towards this different model of care, I think, were very well done. And I think they set a very high standard, which has affected the expectations of the public generally, not just in Midlothian but elsewhere. So I think, yes, I understand we need to collaborate as a whole council towards that, managing public expectations. But I do think, and this is a kind of twisted compliment, but I do think they have to take it on the chin in the department, that they are responsible for the very high expectations. My other comment is really just a sincere congratulations to the enormous efforts and creative thinking that's going into changing the models of care. And I appreciate this has not been in every area been received with appreciation. It has been a huge challenge, and I think the people involved in it need our sincere support and congratulation for what they're doing.
Anybody else want to come in on this report? Okay, so we agree to the recommendations. Agreed. Okay, then.